I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Sam Pitts Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hello there, and welcome to the final episode of All the Small Games for 2019.
Oh, shit.
For the last time this year, my name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Jonathan Valenzuela.
And today, after doing 10 till 6, this week we're going to be doing 5 to 1. You're going to find out our top 5 indie video games for the year of 2019.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it for a long time now.
Yeah, totally. The year starts and I think, God, I can't wait to count down my favorite games from this year at the end of this year.
Yeah.
I don't even want to play them. I just want to tell people what they are.
I just want to blink and it's late December and I'm recording and I'm talking about a bunch of games that I'm like, I love these. I don't know why.
So let's go through our 10 to 6 again.
Just a reminder.
Just a little reminder. So from 10 to 6, number 10 for me was Sayonara Wild Hearts. 9 was Slay the Spire. 8 was What the Golf. 7 was Gato Roboto. And 6 was Untitled Goose Game.
My number 10 was Grindstone. 9 was Children of Morta. 8 was Sayonara Wild Hearts. 7 was Katana Zero. And 6 was Control.
Awesome. So before we started recording the last episode, you mentioned that you re-listened to our best games of 2018.
I did.
And but before we get into our top five, why don't you tell us our top tens for last year?
All right,
because I couldn't even tell you what my favorite game for last
really?
Year.
Really? Come on, you know what number one was.
Hollow Knight.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, sweet.
What about your number two?
I don't remember.
Okay, let's start from the top, shall we?
Okay.
Number 10.
This is my list.
Do your list, then I'll do mine.
Okay,
number 10 for you was Donut County.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 was Minute.
Yep.
Number 8 was The Gardens Between.
Yep.
Number 7 was Wandersong.
Uh-huh.
Number 6 was Deltarune.
That was great.
Number 5 was Yoku's Island Express.
Oh, that was fun.
Number 4 was Iconoclasts.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, number 3 was The Messenger.
Very good.
Number 2, Celeste.
Celeste, of course, duh. Yeah, right.
Of course. My top 10 was, number 10 was Yoku's, number 9 was Minute, number 8 was Gorogoa, number 7 was Wandersong, West of Loathing.
West of Loathing.
Number 6 was The Gardens Between, number 5 was Ashen, number 4 was Into the Breach, number 3, Donut County, number 2, Hollow Knight, and I put Celeste as number one.
Yeah, sure.
So I found it, it was weird listening back and going, oh, that's right, our top 2s were the same games, just in different positions. And I felt going into this one, we're going to have very different top,
Yeah, there's one game that I know we're both going to have in our top 5, but I don't think there's any others.
Yeah. Curious to see what that is.
I think it's going to be Ape Out.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Ape Out, funnily enough, I mean, cats, the apes out of the bag. But obviously, the position it gets on our respective lists is still
That's why
unknown.
You listen, everybody. That's why you keep listening.
But
please don't tune out.
Yeah, but we were discussing soundtracks on the last episode, best soundtracks of the year. And you were talking about how Untitled Goose Game you felt was a contender because of it didn't, there was nothing that you could necessarily hum along with in various moments outside of the game, but within the game it was so amazing and so necessary to building up the kind of vibe of the game and that kind of stuff. For me, that was Ape Out. I think when we discussed, or when you said, hey, let's choose soundtrack of the year, my first thought was, man, Ape Out had a fucking great soundtrack.
Yeah, totally.
And then I stopped and went, soundtrack. Like, it's nothing I could take, like, I wouldn't buy the album for Ape Out because it's so much about playing the game to make the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, the other game that I was considering for my favorite soundtrack of the year is actually my number five game
okay,
of the year.
Okay, let's kick off.
And that is a game I mentioned last week as being my favorite Nintendo game of the year too. It is Cadence of Hyrule.
Oh, of course, yes.
The game, the Zelda game, but Legend of Zelda game made by the Crypt of the Necrodancer team. I could not believe that game was going to exist when it was announced. Just the idea, you know, I've been playing Nintendo games my entire life. I know how much hold they have over their characters. They're so unwilling to work with other people. And obviously they had like great success with the amazing Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle game that they made with Ubisoft.
Sure.
And that in itself was unprecedented. Like, who would have ever thought that they would let Ubisoft, let alone their fucking Rabbids team, do a Mario game. But then I never thought that like a small studio would be able to do a Nintendo game, much less like one of their temple franchises. So when at an indie showcase, no less, they announced that, yeah, the Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is a very difficult rhythm roguelike game, they're going to be making a Zelda game. You know, at first I was like, oh, I guess they're just going to put like a Zelda skin on Crypt of the Necrodancer, a game which I tried and sucked at. But no, it's a full Zelda game, and this is the year that gave us, you know, we got a Link's Awakening remake, which I thought was really beautiful and fun to play. But for me, like, more than any other Nintendo game I played, and I played pretty much all of them this year, from Ring Fit Adventure to Yoshi's Crafted World, Cadence of Hyrule was by far my favorite.
Damn,
it's a very very short experience for a Zelda game. It's a, you know, 5 to 6 hour experience. However, like a few games on our list, they've actually added some content just in the last week.
Oh, nice!
And you can now play apparently a whole new campaign as another character from the Crypt of the Necrodancer game.
Oh, cool!
So I'll be trying to you know, visit that in my spare time over Christmas, or New Year's Eve, depending on when you listen.
Sure.
Almost definitely New Year's Eve, because
imagine if we released our 5-to-1 first, and then you had to wait next week to find out what our 10-to-6 is.
I'm a few beers and ice creams in, John. It could happen.
Oh, boy.
But Cadence of Hyrule was... I thought it was going to be a Crypt of the Necrodancer game, first and foremost, but I would say it's a Zelda game. It's very much you've got to, you know, do a bunch of fun quests to get a bunch of MacGuffins, but you have to traverse through the land Crypt of the Necrodancer style, which is moving on beat.
Sure.
And except all the music is all famous Zelda music redone by the guy who did all the music for Super Meat Boy.
Hell yeah.
It is such a joy to play, and this is... I consider putting this higher because this game had one of the biggest effects on me in the real world.
Right.
Where I finished...
Tetris effect style?
Yeah, I finished playing this game and then went to DJ, and I couldn't... Basically, the enemies only move on the beat too, or you can play this, like, non-set-to-music version where it's a bit more forgiving in your movement, but the enemies only move when you do.
Right.
I played the traditional way, like set to music, but yeah, the enemies only really move when you do, and then too, to the beat, because you're both moving in unison to the same song. And so my brain would only expect one song to play as the other one did.
Right.
So I was matching, like beat matching while DJing, but like in the same way that I was moving.
Okay.
And it's really hard to describe, but my brain couldn't get out of that pattern of not thinking, okay, like now that one's moving, then the other one will move. And I no other game did that to me this year.
Sure.
It was a very, very strange phenomenon like to happen to me afterwards. But yeah, the game is just such a delight to play as a Zelda fan and as a fan of weird indies. And to me, it means so much more of, like, you know, I hope we get 1 to 10 indie takes on Nintendo franchises a year now.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they actually, like, this opens the floodgates.
Yeah, and I thought hopefully we would have heard, you know, because I think the announcer for this was at the end of 2018, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe it was one of the earlier ones in 2019. But I really hope that we do get a bunch more collaborations.
Imagine if they were like, you know that new Metroid game that we've been working on? We've given it to Doinksoft.
Yeah, totally.
The people that made Gato Roboto are now making the new Metroid.
I mean, I would love a proper 2D Metroid that's, you know, made to look... A pixel art 2D Metroid made by a proper Nintendo team. God, that's a dream. That is a goddamn dream. But Cadence of Hyrule, an absolutely incredible soundtrack, and so much fun to play. If for whatever reason, the fact that it's a, you know, a weird collaboration or you know, a quote unquote rhythm game, it's putting you off and you're a Zelda fan, you got to get it. It's
yeah, just fucking shut and up and buy
have
it.
Have you played it?
No, I haven't.
This is one that I think you would love.
Okay.
I think this is like a universally good game, I think.
I think should be still on sale. I think the sale ends Jan 22nd, you were saying? There are
Jan,
a bunch...
Jan the 2nd.
Jan the 2nd. Megan the Stallion, Jan the 2nd.
That's the quota of rap references for this episode. Yeah, it's up for a few more days.
Cool. So, great.
Go on and get it.
Go on. Okay.
Kenneth Sahara, that's my number five. What's your number five,
John? Numero cinco pour moi.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm trilingual because that was a fucking mashup of Spanish and French. What the Golf?
Mm.
That was your... That was
number eight?
Yeah. Again, we discussed in the last episode that Apple Arcade came out, and this is the first game that we just kind of rushed into and went, oh shit, this is amazing. I funnily enough, there was a bug, if you remember, there was a bug in the
yes.
one level where they just hadn't, they hadn't, one of the finished, portal levels. They hadn't finished the level and it just left like placeholder art in. And both of us were like, they just said something like, screenshot this. And I'm like, ooh, maybe this is some crazy like phone mechanics yes, totally. Part that, oh, great, screenshot. I think I had like five screenshots of this one level as I'm trying to work out what happens. Nope, turns out it was a bug. But
they fixed it.
Yeah, they did. I love humor. This has so much. It's so imbued with humor all the way out throughout. It's funny you were talking about. I think in the last episode you were talking about how they've introduced a. Well, they had introduced. I'm not sure if it has gone away since Christmas is finished, but they introduced the advent calendar.
Yep.
The whole game almost felt like an advent calendar, in that as you wandered into these various labs and hit the first level, you were like, what's going to happen? Like, I have no idea what I'm going to be facing down. This is a golf game in name only, essentially.
Yeah.
It strayed so far from golf. What could I possibly be playing in this one? And you never knew if it was like a space level where gravity was negligible and you could like fire crazy curved shots around planets and stuff. Or is it a portal level where like, you know, you fire portals around with your thing and then...
Fucking super hot.
Yeah, is it super hot?
The super levels are so good.
Is it one of those honestly kind of disappointing levels where you had to move the phone around to look?
Oh, yeah, they sucked. It's first person. It was fun, like, the first time.
I appreciate the hustle, but at the same time, I'm like...
I want to lie down.
I'm on the couch. Yeah. Don't do this. I don't want to get up. Yeah, I just... It packed so much inventiveness and so much kind of mischievous glee at like, games and gaming in general that...
Yeah, all the weird game references were such highlights, too.
I had such a fantastic time with it that I came very close to 100%ing it. There were just, like, one or two levels that are the hardest kind of... The hardest setting. I was like, I can't do this. This is too hard. But I also loved in the credits how they said, like, you play the credits as well, which is great. You kind of you hit a golf ball through. But they were like, we are working on more content. There is more content on the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, hell, so excited. Yes, I just want more of this game. And to the point that you made in the last episode as well, putting a show your friend mode in, genius. Just genius level game design there. Like, I too... was so excited to go to work and hand this game around to people and be like, play this. And inevitably they'd like play that first level and be like, okay. And then play the second level and be like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on? And start laughing.
I mean, give it to a 5-year-old if you want to see them just like dissolve into just laughter. It's so great.
It's such a great feeling watching this game get played. So that was my number five.
Do you want to switch beers? I bought this beer. It's called Yeasty Boys. Gonna Matter Earl Grey IPA, because I'm like, I like beer, I like tea, who could ask for anything more? I don't really like it.
Turns out you don't.
Boldly floral, much like your granny's bedroom, with stone fruit and citrus notes and a long dry finish.
I think
you'll like it. You like IPAs,
worst small
right?
game of the year.
Whereas I gave you a Moritz, which is a like definitely my kind of beer.
Hell yeah,
extremely boring lager.
European exotic. All right.
Oh, that's a good lager.
Number five. My number four is Ape Out.
Oh, there it is.
Yep, there
hold
it
on,
is.
Hold on a minute. Hold on, John. Hold on one fucking second.
Hold up.
Hold on one fucking
Have
second.
Have we matched up?
Finally, we matched up, bro.
Really?
We are touching dicks on this one. Ape Out is my number four as well.
Awesome. Cool. So we can just both talk about this at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
ready
this is,
and go.
Ape Out. I think this is we've only done two Game of the Year lists, but this is the first time we've matched up in terms of placement.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, got so close with one and two last year.
You know, I have been...
I had to go and like Celeste more, like a dickhead.
But yeah, Ape Out, another Devolver banger.
Yeah.
In a year full of them. You play as an ape who escapes a...
variety of scenarios,
but I guess at the beginning you're one of many apes that are trapped in a testing facility.
Yes.
Basically, the first people you come up against are, like, you know, thugs that have, like, pretty primitive pistols and maybe a shotgun. And then as you progress through these multiple levels, not only does the terrain become different, but you also are facing enemies with more advanced weapons.
Yep.
However, you can grab onto them and then use their weapons against your other enemies as well.
And also while using them as human shields.
There is a level of procedural generation to each level. Like, no level is ever the same, right?
No, it's one. That's right. It's all like each time you die, a new level is regenerated or a new level is generated for your next playthrough. So which is great because you never like, it's not about learning a level. It's about learning how to play the game properly.
Yeah. And you can, I mean, there are some levels where like I didn't kill anybody. I managed to like stealth it and run past as much people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other levels where I killed absolutely everyone on the screen and then asked for more to be set on the screen so I could kill them too.
Yeah.
It was such a fun game to play mechanically. I just didn't... I started it. I didn't put it down until I finished it.
Yeah, right.
When I last spoke to you about this game, you had not finished the final level.
With the knowledge of this episode in mind, I went in the other day to play again. Here's the thing.
Oh, no.
I got to a run through on the very last level where I was in sight of the exit. Like, the tunnel to get out of the building. I was there. And I got shot in the fucking back, and I got so angry that I had to put the game down. I have not gone back, but it is still on my list of I want to finish this.
Yeah, it's the last level is so fun and creative,
but at the same time, like brutally difficult.
It's actually there is a. I found that's not as procedurally generated as the other ones.
Okay.
There is a path you can take that I found a lot. Like, once you stick to a path, you're like you nut out where you need to be when
nut out.
And there are things you can use to help you in that final level.
Sure.
Which make the run a lot easier.
But, I think this was like... This came out like 20th of January or something this year.
Was
like,
that early?
It was
Piganiku, wasn't it?
No, it was super early in the year because I remember when it came out stupidly being like, oh my God, guys, it's my number one game of the year and it's only Jan or Feb or something like that. It was Jan, like, okay, maybe Jan 20th, not right, but Jan or Feb, it was that soon at the beginning of the year kind of thing.
28th of February.
28th of Feb, there we go. But yeah, it's not like, not only that, the design of it, the actual look of it is fantastic. Like, it's, you know, it looks like a Saul Bass kind of... That's the reference everyone uses.
Yeah,
I think saying like opening of Mad Men might be more instructive.
Very like, 40s, 50s silhouette based pop art kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Very
sort of solid colors with a grain laid over them.
I saw a lot of people like kind of questioning why it was a game about a monkey and there was jazz and Saul Bass was the... But I was kind of like, why question it? Just accept it and that's what the game is.
I fucking hate it when I see like... When I see reviewers and people like, oh, but why is this? Like, it is. Just accept it and move on.
Exactly. Like, there's so much to be enjoyed because of those combination.
But like I was saying at the top of the episode as well, the soundtrack, just the way it's generated by your action in the game is absolute, like, incredible design.
Yeah. So, like, it's jazz, but in particular jazz drumming. And so the more people you kill, the more frantic the soundtrack becomes.
My goodness.
And
it's a weird beer.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine.
It's yours now.
Yeah, it's like drinking a bath soap.
I hate fruity IPAs.
I don't mind. There's something about this one that's just weird. Anyway.
We have been eating hella ice cream.
That's true.
So this is made by three people. Bennett Foddy, who made
Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Which is an indie game I've never played, but I've watched many people try to play on YouTube.
Sure.
In which you play a man in a pot with a ladle trying to get over the top of a mountain.
It's a sledgehammer, but
Is it a sledgehammer? Yeah, right, yeah. Sure. I'm sure there's a mod where you can have a ladle.
Yeah. It's a game about making games, essentially.
Gabe Cazillo and Matt Bosch.
Bock.
Was the main music composer on this as well.
Weird because Bennett Foddy used to play for Cut Copy. So
yeah.
I think Bennett Foddy did the art. Gabe Cazillo did the actual like mechanical game design, and then the other guy did the music.
What a great game!
Three people making that incredible.
I love how many games were inspired by Hotline Miami, which in turn was inspired by like Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2, which I think is like, even though I have not revisited them since playing them when I was a teenager, that's like still my favorite era of Grand Theft Auto, and yeah. I wish those games were more readily available. I almost bought the dumbass PS1 classic just so I could play
the first
Grand Theft Auto game. It's really hard to play those games now. I have like a 3-disc PS1 compilation of the first three GTA games. Like,
oh, nice.
1, 2, and the UK one.
Okay.
But I don't have a PS1 to play them on.
God damn.
It keeps me up at night. I should get it and just play it because they're so much fun. I love how many top-down shooters we get now. And
yeah.
Ape Out felt like such a crazy take on that genre.
Yeah.
And again, another game that, was all about trial and error, killing of many people trying to kill you, that took the wind out of My Friend Pedro's sails as well.
Yep, I agree with that. And I think it's like, whereas My Friend Pedro wanted like, it was so much about stacking up that big score, which was kind of forcing you to play
yes.
the way that it wanted you to play. Whereas what I loved with Ape Out was it was just pure like Twitch response gameplay.
Because
I remember when I, like the first kind of few levels I played, I was like, yeah, I'm a big fucking monkey. I'm going to kill everybody in this bitch. Let's go. And it was only after I like failed those levels a bunch of time that I realized like, oh no, actually what I want to be doing is being very stealthy. And then the moment I spot someone, killing them and then just fucking running. Like, for anyone.
Not necessarily. There are so many different ways you can
do it.
Yeah. I loved how open it was to interpretation of how you can play this game. I think there is a run. You can do a pacifist run of this game. I think that encourages you to try. There's no fucking way
to be able to.
I finished the game and then I've made it through the first two worlds or whatever on hard mode.
Right.
It gets so insane. But as soon as rocket launchers and snipers and that thing came in, and I was just like, nope, I can't.
Yeah, this is too much.
But yeah, you can grab onto doors and use them as shields. You can use other humans as shields. God, what
you
a
can
fun
even
game.
Like you can pick up body parts.
Yes, and throw
them essentially. Like it won't kill the person; just throw them off long enough for you to get there and take them out,
smash them up.
Yeah,
great game,
fantastic game,
and a must play.
Oh,
it's in the same way that I think about Gato Roboto, ironically, also a Devolver Digital published game this year. It's the embodiment of what I like about indie games, Ape Out. It's a bunch of weird ideas thrown together and it being like just like, you know, it doesn't overstay its welcome at all.
Yeah.
It has immense replayability. And it's a really fun one to show somebody else.
Yeah. I think it's rewarding for spectators as much as for the person playing. Although the spectators will definitely be like, you just died, give me the control.
Yeah, I mean this is a game that I can imagine you and me playing. When in our formative friendship years, when you and I used to stay up all night playing GTA 3 and Vice City and stuff like that, where we would play until the other person died or like do a mission and you know like just passing the controller, I can imagine you and me getting a massive kick out of this game back in the day.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why we do this shit, man.
Hell yeah, man! This is the reason for the season.
So that's our number four. Let's go to number three. Do you want to take this one, John?
I will. It's Untitled Goose Game.
There it is.
Yeah, finally it showed
up.
The
honkening.
The honkening has occurred. I mean, that was what, your number eight on your list?
No, number six.
Number six. Okay, so now that we've proven with data that I have better taste in games. No, I'm kidding. I was so excited for Untitled Goose Game ever since I saw that first little gameplay, that demo they released. It's just... it's soaking in charm. It's just such a, like, from this little English village they've created is so, for someone like me who grew up on, like, Enid Blyton books and a lot of kind of British children's TV and that kind of stuff, it was definitely this world I felt weirdly comfortable in.
See, I went more Australian than that. I thought Play School straight away.
Okay, that's interesting.
A children's TV show here.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's got...
The piano is the main reason I got it.
Of course, yeah.
Blunk, dun-dunk, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, dun, 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 yeah.
And it definitely, it has like a children's book aesthetic to it.
Absolutely,
yeah. But, again, it's like you just said for Ape Out, it taking these weird ideas, this like, let's make a stealth game, but instead of a spy, it's a goose. And like... Your job is just to annoy people, essentially, and like bring a bit of havoc to their day, kind of thing. I spent like it's a weird thing I have where I am not a patriotic person at all, except when like I look up a music video on YouTube and it has the Rage logo at the beginning. For some reason, that makes me be like Australia, man, hell yeah. And indie video games, and just the fact that like a 4-person team in Melbourne made this game that the whole world via the internet has just gone batshit crazy for. For some reason, I'm like, fuck, I'm proud of that. That's so good.
And it had a bit of the kind of like, you know, the Wii Sports thing where like people who don't play games were talking about Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, I think they when they released it, it was available on Switch and then PC and Mac OS.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of people were just playing it, like, you know, the first game they ever bought on their laptop or whatever. And then just played it until they couldn't do anything more in the game.
Yeah.
An old friend of ours, Anne Cayley, one of her tweets went viral because she dragged every single thing, every single object in the game back to the goose's nest.
Okay.
And then finally enough, someone was like pointed out, actually, you forgot, like, it was like one thing in the game. And then she went back there, dragged that back to the nest. She was like, now I've done it. Fuck you. But it was really fun. Like a lot of people that I don't associate with video games talked about this game. I think maybe because of the memeability of it, you know, you
definitely
had Pedestrian and Junkie and I guess, you know, other pop culture kind of, gossipy websites around the world talking about this game and its influence on
and it broke beyond culture. Being a video game and became like there were discussions about like is the goose a leftist or on the right side of the political spectrum.
And you had lots of Brexit protester signs featured the Untitled Goose himself.
Yeah,
I loved it. Yeah, it was great.
I think one of the developers was like, prior to the game, the goose chased Margaret Thatcher out of Britain and like installed John Major.
They've been hilariously political, especially recently. It was just before the recent UK election. They were like, we don't tweet much, but please don't fucking vote Tory.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And anyway.
Yeah.
The British election was the worst game of 2019 by far. Actually, no. Australian election, second worst. But
was that even this year?
I think it was.
Jesus
I think it was
Christ.
Like early this year. It's been a long year. But also, I love, like, again, it's a game that, like,
Who published the Australian election? Was that Devolver?
No. I think it was...
COD.
The team of,
Call of Duty. Fuck you, Call of Duty.
It was EA.
Yeah.
It's a game that gives a lot of sort of leeway and elasticity to how you want to play it. Because there are all these people, like, as you get with a lot of other stealth games, it's like, right... I'm going to, like, people do run-throughs where they have to honk the entire time. Can they, like, finish the game by honking the whole way through?
Oh, right, because it alerts everyone to your presence.
They're sort of setting their own parameters for how they want to do a playthrough, and I think that's another example of, like, amazing game design of, yeah, you get the freedom to do as you wish, essentially.
Which was your favorite level in the game?
I really liked the two neighbors side by side. I thought that was fun. Like,
yeah, me too.
Bopping back and forth across the fence, and especially working out.
And like, you know, in my narrative, they hate each other.
Oh, of course. They are like, she's some weird hippie, and he's like a very regimented, probably old military person. Right, yeah. And of course, they fucking hate one another. But
not as much as they hate that damn goose, though.
Oh boy, I united them.
My biggest disappointment was that you couldn't interact with the miniature world more. I wish there was more things you could do in that.
It was a bit like, it did feel like a bit of a hurried coda. Like, oh, I'm in this miniature world. Oh, I can just go get the bell and then I got to get out.
Yeah.
Like, that was right.
It will. Yeah.
I will admit, when I finished the game, when I finished the base game, I did go like, oh, that's it. I was expecting more kind of thing. But then I realized, like, no, it's the perfect length. That's...
Yeah, I don't know, but look, I think this is me really trying to find things to criticize.
Sure.
We're so used to indie video games being announced, like most of the games on here, like Ape Out was announced like 3 months before it came out.
Yeah.
Or like you see rumblings of it, you don't see full, like, you know, 2 minute long trailers or anything like that. Whereas I feel like Untitled Goose Game had like a 2 year lead in.
2 year lead with a, off the back of a 10 minute, off the back of a 10 minute demo video.
Right.
Because that whole garden, the first level was pretty much shown in a video years before it came out.
And gamers, we're the dumbest. We overhype things so much in the lead up to them coming out, and we get ourselves so ready for disappointment. And like, yeah, like I said, like I think I loved the game as much as I did because I played it with my kids and I saw it through their eyes. Like, I hate the song Dance Monkey. The other day, I had like a random Spotify playlist on, and Dance Monkey came on, and I went to skip it, and then my 3-year-old daughter Tilly said, "Dance Monkey." And then I learned that somehow she knows all the words to Dance Monkey. And now it's one of my
favorite.
Now it's one of my favorite songs of the year because I've heard her sing it, and it's like I love it now. And I get it. That's a song for children,
right?
Okay. And like this game is this game is such a perfect game to introduce people to games with.
Sure.
And I think for that it deserves so much merit. But yeah, like if you are a quote unquote disgusting seasoned gamer, this is, it's not what you're used to. You are used to things being, it feels like you learn how to play the game and then the game ends.
Sure.
A little bit.
Sure.
And you're waiting for that big final challenge. Obviously, having the bell there. It is so much fun, but I like that I kind of knew how it was going to end and I was able to experience that with my kids instead of it being alone for it.
Well, even like my whole thing about like, oh, it's over. Like, I do like the fact that almost immediately it was like, there's a heap more to-do list for you to do. Because I went and looked and went like, oh, cool, these are challenges that, like, cross between areas, and I, like, some of them are cryptic, and I need to work it out. So I just went, cool, roll my sleeves up, head right back into town, and let's keep going.
Yeah,
then.
That's awesome. Whereas Archie was like, what? We have to do more things.
Arch.
Yeah, it was great.
What
a great game. Although it does remind me a little bit of Gardens Between, another really great game that ended, I think, a little bit abruptly last year.
Yep, that's
fair.
And
again, developed and in Melbourne.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Melbourne may be the small games capital of the world.
Right.
Because if you go a little bit souther, Adelaide, where a two-man team can make the 50-hour or more Hollow Knight.
True. Imagine what they can do in the south of Perth. It's like one person.
So much meth.
An 80- Well, you need that much meth to make a good indie game. Ooh, there's another big truck outside. It's not the home ice cream one. It looks like
a sewage truck.
Yeah.
Let's go buy a...
Let's get some sewage.
A bucket of sewage.
Running back
inside, and my wife's like, we already got a big bucket of sewage. That's a callback to last week, everyone. You should have listened. It was great.
Yeah.
A highlight of our 10 to 6 list was when we got ice cream.
Yeah. Number 3, buddy.
Number 3 for me. Do you want to try and guess it?
No.
Okay, cool. It's the Friends of Ringo Ishikawa.
Of course. Shit. All right. Yeah. I got to get my head in the game.
Yeah. So the Friends of Ringo Ishikawa is a... I love the River City Ransom games, which it's a very, very early, like 80s Japanese beat-em-up game where you play as a Japanese student who beats up other Japanese students who wear different colors to you, and that makes them bad.
How dare they?
And we've seen so many iterations of the beat-em-up game, so many different River City Ransom games. They even released River City Girls this year as well. But River City, what's the fucking called? Friends of Ringo Ishikawa has you play as a would-be successful student. Were you not swayed by the excitement of beating up students who wear different colors to your own uniform?
Addicted to the beat up.
And so this is a game where you can play it like River City Rampage and just spend your nights beating up other students and getting money and then buying food to give yourself energy to go beat up more students. But this is also a game with a day-night cycle, and you have to sleep at the end of each night, and suddenly it becomes a scheduling game where you actually are encouraged to focus on your studies. And it's like a life sim where you have to borrow books from the library and have to sit down and in real time read them. And then you also have to find people who will teach you new moves and basically, like, you know, like, further your friendships with certain people in the game. You have to, like, you know, there's so much that goes on in this game. It was made by one person.
Jesus.
One Russian man.
That was always the wildest part for me, was like, oh, wow, a Russian guy made this?
So, Y-O, Yo is his
That's
name.
That's right, yeah.
And he's, yeah, a Russian dude who works, I mean, the main people he worked with on this game are testers and translators.
Right.
And for a game that has been written originally in Russian, I guess,
sure.
or like, you know, written by a Russian person whose English is certainly not his first language, about Japan, it is such an insanely thoughtfully written game where the dialogue, I skip a lot of dialogue, especially if it's cutscenes with talking audio. I just my brain turns off straight away.
Sure.
But if it's like, there's something about pixel art games with dialogue where I'm just like, oh, I'm going to read all of this. And this game was just so rewarding from a narrative point of view. This is way more your bag than it is mine. I just found the story in this game so endearing, about this, like, this, you know, would-be bright kid who's just so just can't stop beating up other kids and being a dumb thug, being encouraged by every teacher in his life to, like, you know, have a scholarship and try and, like, you know, do all these extra research things. And I love, like the time management of it. I think, you know, I am obviously, as anyone who listens to this game often, I'm far more drawn to a pixel art game than I am any other kind of game. And this is a pixel art game where you could do almost anything.
Yeah.
And there are so many weird things that you can completely miss in a playthrough of this game. Or like, you know, you could play this game for 10 hours and not work out what you're meant to do.
Yeah, I definitely did that.
But the, you know, if you want tips, the developer has left tons of them all over the internet for you to find and give yourself a little like, you know, helpful guide through the game should you need it. But I would totally recommend this. I'm pretty sure it's on sale at the moment too. If not, it's such an important game, I think. And
yeah.
He has become like my most anticipated
next game.
And he's already scrapped what he was working on next and started anew on something completely different.
Oh shit.
Love him. I love this guy. I know nothing about him beyond that he made this almost perfect game. And I emailed him and said how much I loved it, and he was, you know, very, very appreciative.
Like, amazing.
This is the embodiment of what I love about indie games, aside from the time thing. This took me about 15 hours to play.
Sure.
Maybe around 10 hours to play. You know, it's a bit longer than your average small game. But it's, like I said, it's earlier. It's you know, a bunch of weird ideas jammed together. Like this, it's a would-be beat-em-up game, except it's a time management life sim.
Yeah.
And about story. So it's almost like, you know, what people want out of a Shenmue game.
Sure.
But it's, you know, very, very, like, you know, primitive 8-bit graphical style, 16-bit graphical style. Not that after 10 minutes you even notice. Like, there's a lot of emotion that you can get from these funny
totally.
Faces.
And yeah.
Man, I fucking love this game. It's so good. It's one that I can't wait to eventually play again, even though I have no plans to. I know one day I will.
Sure.
And
sure.
I can't wait for that, because I you know, going into this game, knowing what to do, knowing who to talk to first to initiate points in the story that will allow me to access certain things as soon as possible. Because, like, yeah, like the first 2 hours I spent in this game, I was just fucking around. If you get beaten up too much, you fall asleep, you pass out and wake up in your bed with no money.
Like, yeah.
Just like great weird things like that. Like, it definitely pushes the player away in those early hours. And I think games should challenge you.
Sure, of course.
Not all of them, but, like, you know, a game like this, I adored every moment of this game, and I'm regretting putting it at number 3, to be honest. It could be higher, but 2 and 1 are just too special.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm very, very curious about what your two and one are. So,
okay, so I know I'm going to jump butt in here and try and guess yours. So
okay.
I know you've got Outer Wilds in there.
Yes.
I know you've got Disco Elysium in there. Yes. I'm going to guess Disco Elysium number one, Outer Wilds number two. I have no idea what number three is.
Have I not done number three?
Did you just do number three? We did Ape Out.
Yeah, and then I did Untitled Goose Game.
Oh fuck! Okay,
and
right.
You did Ringo Ishikawa.
Okay, well let's find out even though I can't listen, let's find out if I'm right with my predictions.
So I'm my number two now.
Yep.
Baby, it's Outer Wilds.
God damn it!
You were right.
He's done it again.
He's done it again. Outer Wilds, published by Annapurna, developed by Mobius Digital. It's funny. Dan Fletcher, friend of ours. Just started playing it, uh-huh. Like in the last couple of days, and he sent me a message where he's like, "This is like if No Man's Sky was made by Tim Schafer," and I was like, "That's a fucking perfect description." Like, you know, the kind of like the expansive concept of space travel and exploration, married with like a really tightly focused kind of cute story. That is, you know, that
is inhabited by mostly annoying characters. Is that what you're going with this?
Well, no, I mean. No. Hey, who's annoying in the Tim Schafer-verse?
Almost everyone.
Really?
Like, given time afterwards. Oh, sure. At the time, we loved them.
Everyone's annoying on a long enough timeline, yeah, sure, Levins. Yeah.
Even me.
Yeah.
Especially me.
Yeah, it's... for me, it was one of those things of, like... It's funny, actually, listening back to last year's game of our
it's
game
insane
of the year
that
one.
You put two platformers as your number one and two last year. That is so
oh
on
that's
John
that's so not me.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was one thing that really came up over and over
that's
again
my
with
disgusting
you.
Influence.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. It was one of the really interesting thing that came up over and over again last year was you talking about how one of the things you love the most in games is exploration.
Yep.
This just does exploration so perfectly. Like it is really, it's great when games give you the chance to experience something that you might not ever get to experience. I'll never blast off to space, probably, in my lifetime.
I don't say that, man.
Yeah, it's coming, dude. It's coming.
You don't know what you're going to get for Christmas.
But with this, from the first moment you jump into your spaceship and just rocket out of the atmosphere and see the whole solar
Elton
system.
Elton John starts playing.
Yeah, exactly. But for some reason, it's I'm Still Standing.
It's Crocodile.
Just the feeling of like, oh my God, I can wander anywhere. I can do anything. I can like this whole solar system is laying before me. I choose where I want to go from this point. Like the rush of that feeling, the rush of that sense of freedom is amazing. And for all the long, like, Outer Wilds was my number one for such a long time this year until Disco Elysium came out. And even
spoilers.
Then it was a huge, like, huge argument within me as to which one takes it. But, yeah, Outer Wilds is something that if you have the chance, play it. And you'll know exactly, like, you'll get the exact sense of what I'm talking about. Just that first moment you take off from your home planet. And then the first time you get hit with the 22-minute time cycle. So it's like minute, but
yep.
It's 22 minutes.
22 minutes.
22 minute. But that first time you get hit by that supernova and wake up back on your own home planet and like talk to people and go, what the hell's going on? And everyone's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And you're like, I died. Why am I still here? Kind of thing. But, you know, from that to the design of the planets and the way that they have, like, hazards built into them that kind of force you to really focus on your exploration, to each life cycle you go through kind of going like, okay, this one, I'm doing this thing. I have a goal for it. And your goal might change every time. Like, you might fuck up on your way to that goal, so you try it again. Or you go like, okay, I'm going to leave that one for the moment and focus on this goal instead. Like,
yep.
It's a game that allows you to play it how you, like, play through this mystery, play through this story, how you choose to do that, not how the designer wants you to do it. And that sense of freedom is always fantastic in a game when done right. I love Outer Wilds. I have yet to finish it. I hope to sit down, because it's on my Xbox, I hope to sit down at some point during this holiday period, what little there is left on the 30th of December. Yeah.
Which is definitely when we're recording.
Oh, totally. We're recording on the 2nd of Jan. How does that work? But yeah, it's something I hope to sit down and actually, I think I'm pretty close to the end. I just need to do a couple more things, but yeah, it's incredible. It's,
how many hours in would you say you were?
Oh, maybe about 10, 12. Yeah, right, okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a medium game.
But just every time you land on a new world and figure out what's going on in that world, finding little objects at the edge of the solar system, there's so many things about this game that just each time you do it just gives you a little hit of endorphins. Like, oh, that's fucking incredible.
Unreal.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, it's a game that I definitely... like. It came out the same week as Death Stranding on PS4.
And you made the wrong choice. Yeah,
Angus will kill you, dude. He will actually hunt you down and kill you.
That's fine.
But yeah, it is definitely one that I wish I was able to squeeze in this year. But I also didn't want to like play like half an hour of it and be like, oh, I think I get it. It's really good, I guess.
Yeah,
sure. I've heard so many people like play like a cycle and be like, yeah, I don't really know what to do. And like on fucking like, man, don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely something I'm going to play in the next year.
Excellent, excellent.
I look forward to giving you a high five when... I learn how good it truly is.
Wonderful. Now I cannot guess your number. I cannot guess
your... Do you want to try?
For some weird reason, I cannot, like... I think it's... I almost need the Tumblr in front of me to go through, like...
All the games we've played this year.
Yeah, it's tough to kind of recall.
Well, number two is a game that's already featured on your top 10.
Interesting. Okay.
Katana Zero.
Right. Sure.
Katana Zero, my favorite Devolver Digital game of the year in a year that was filled with many good ones.
Yes.
And you mentioned earlier, it's you're playing as an ex-samurai, ex-soldier, who just wants a quiet life but also wants no one to be near him and has to make periodic visits with a psychiatrist just so he can get drugs that will, keep his mind at ease.
Because yes.
He has this experimental drug within him that allows him to slow down and alter time. What I loved about it was that, majority of my favorite Devolver games from Miami, Hotline Miami to Ape Out, is that, you know, it's all about like, you know, die and die again until you get to the end of the level. Katana Zero is that, but it has a story.
Yes.
And Hotline Miami sort of has a story, like a pretty fucked up one.
Yeah.
And so does Katana Zero, but Katana Zero is so much more dialogue driven. And I found myself like, one, absolutely loving the set of tools you're given to traverse these, very twitchy, slow down time, kill, doing the perfect run, trying to like make it through a few rooms without being killed by somebody else. Like, there's something so satisfying in that kind of... This is one of my favorite style of games, that Hotline Miami kind of gameplay.
Sure.
But I loved that aspect of it, but I also found myself really looking forward to my next dialogue with, you know, the little girl that lives next door to me.
Yep.
And my psychiatrist as well. And as that gets more and more fucked up and learning more about that world, you know, you are given a set of underworld figures that you have to take out.
Yes.
And that kind of is the boss to each level. And there's so many weird secrets in this game too. There's like, there's a bunch of rooms that you are granted access to at the end, but you have to find the codes to get into each room, and you get them by replaying the game and making a different decision at certain key points of the game to try and find these, entry cards. There's like hidden bosses in this game. And even though it was a game that ends a little bit preemptively than I was expecting, I was like, I ended it instead of going like, oh, it's over, like on a Goose game, I was like, oh my God, there's going to be a next one.
Oh, hell yeah. That's
right. And being really, really excited for that sequel and you know, because it's such a... They've already completely perfected the gameplay, which means now they can just introduce all these great, fun new mechanics in the second one of these. And, you know, how are they going to continue the story? Who's going to be involved? There's, like, you know, also, like, you can end this game quite early by choosing to die.
Yes.
And I love it when games give you that option. It makes me remember one of the first games I ever played where that happened was a game called Neverhood.
Yep.
It was a PC adventure game, and everything was made out of clay.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the game, it's like, don't jump down here. If you jump down here, you'll die and the game will be over. And so, of course, you just go, click, I'm going to jump down here and see what happens. And it's like, game over. We told you this would kill you. Why did you do it? And there's a similar kind of moment in this game where characters outright say, you know, you can live or die at this point. What choice are you going to make? If you just die, just the credits run.
There's also one thing I love is... In dialogues with people, you can choose to interrupt them.
Yes, which is such an amazing feature. Yeah. Weird.
Like, there were definitely times where I'm like, I'm going to hear this person out. But I think a lot of the time with the psychiatrist who quickly proves themselves to be a piece of shit, I'd be like, shut up!
Yeah.
Don't talk like me!
And then, like, you know, you get less dialogue options with that character if you cut them off.
Yeah, of course.
And they get angrier with you and they cut the conversation with you.
Like,
yeah.
It was a very interesting combination of, like, really good... pretty tight platforming and so combat tight. Mechanics, like,
yeah.
With really interesting kind of narrative choice based story stuff.
What's funny is that until the collection came out on Switch this year for a very short time in Australia,
right.
Before getting banned, I'd never played Hotline Miami. So okay. I'd played so many games that were influenced by it, you know, Katana Zero, Ape Out, Away From Pedro, all published by Devolver. And so when I played Hotline Miami, I kept trying to do a slowdown button.
Right.
Because I'm used to it in Katana Zero and my friend Pedro and, you know, even like games like Time Recoil. And Time Recoil, one of my favorite underrated gems on the Switch, is 90% off right now. It's like $1.20
hot
in
dang.
Australia. If you're Australian, you have like 3 days to do it. Go to the Switch sale, buy Time Recoil. It is a very short Hotline Miami-esque game in which you can alter time. And every time you kill somebody, up to 8 different people, if you kill them, you keep getting more superpowers, basically.
Hell yeah.
And upgrades to what you can do in a short window of time. So it really is like, it's a really great kind of Hotline Miami-esque game for a speedrunning community.
Yep.
Definitely recommend. Have you played it at all?
I think I might have played it on my...
Did I get you a code for it?
No.
I think you might even have it. We'll see. We should see. I love that game. You should buy it. If I can get you one, you should buy it.
Sure.
$1.20, man.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
Okay.
It could be more, but like, you know, around the $2 mark for very underrated game.
Anything less than 10 is gravy, my friend. Let's do this.
Yeah. So once you kill somebody, you can slow down time in that game. And so I kept waiting for something in Hotline Miami to allow me to slow down time. In Katana Zero, I think it's like one of the left trigger or whatever.
Sure.
Allows you to slow down time to the point where you can have someone, you can hear a gunshot, slow down time, see the bullet coming towards you, then deflect it with your katana, and then it hits them and kills them.
That was always so fun.
Yep.
So
like one person can be alerted to your presence in the room, and then you can kill them after they fire one shot, and then no one's any the wiser that you're in the room with them. And it became to the point where like I would kill, like, you know, I would make my way through like 75% of the room, and then suddenly someone would be alerted to my presence. And even though I probably could have gotten to 100% of that room, I'd be like, no, I'm going to kill myself. No. I want to do this completely undetected.
You've
got
to do this right.
And yeah, another really great replayable game. You can revisit any of the levels in that game from once you finished it at any point. And there's, you know, you should, because you can get access to new shit and new bosses and cool stuff like that. Like, so, I mean, it's an older game now. I don't know if you know this. The secret boss in that game is like a monstified version of the psychiatrist.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, yeah. And it's really difficult to get him. I still haven't done it yet. I just know that that's something that exists in that game.
Okay.
And that's like, whenever I see a bunch of new games in my library, I'm like, oh, but I need to go back and find that weird boss in Katana Zero.
Yeah. I got to do the monster psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That sounds dope.
A real fucking good game.
Hell yeah. All right. Number one, baby.
Disco Elysium.
Yours.
Of mine.
Yeah.
So you can't guess it at all? A game that I liked so much, I think I named the episode...
Blasphemous. Levin's.
Yes. I even named one of the episodes of all the small games. Blasphemous is Levin's favorite game of the year.
He left a clue.
Yeah. It was very cryptic.
Yeah. Took a lot of solving. Blasphemous, of course. Tell us about your weird, kinky, gothic horror game.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, Blasphemous was a game that I saw advertised, like, a year or two ago. It kind of goes against what I was saying about Untitled Goose Game, but it was definitely a less is more approach to that, where I just saw this, like, hyper-violet pixel art game where with like these bizarre enemies that you were fighting, and you look like a dude with a whip or whatever.
Yeah,
like, you know, it just looked so weird and gory, but just incredible. I mean, I love pixel art.
Sure,
anyone who listens knows it.
Hey,
it's my preferred.
I love it too.
Form of art, and yeah, I mean, like, I didn't think it was kind of come to Switch. I thought it was just going to be like a PC game, or you know, like a console game, like that, except for Switch. So when they announced like day and date, it was going to come to Switch and all other consoles, I was like, oh my god, holy moly!
Yeah.
And I wrote to the developer of that game, the publisher of that game. So it was developed by the Game Kitchen and published by Team 17,
mm-hmm.
who had a pretty good year. Yeah. As publishers.
Team 17, they're like
best known for Overcooked and Worms.
Worms.
Yeah, but
And Overcooked Worms.
They should do that.
Yeah.
They're doing an escapist survival game is their next game that they're doing.
Okay.
Did you see that? It was in the last Nindies
video.
But look, Blasphemous is unlike anything that Team 17 ever published before. It's a Metroidvania.
Gasp.
Which is not unlike any game that I've played. And I think, you know, my favorite last game of last year was a Metroidvania. It's my favorite genre of game. In my favorite kind of art, pixel art. This is also the year that I finally played Castlevania Symphony of the Night on Vita and loved it. And, you know, I was disappointed by Blasphemous immediately after it. I still would say that, like, the art style, the, you know, Unity Engine 3D graphical style of Bloodstained is the biggest detriment to that game. I wish it was a pixel art game.
You said you finished Castlevania and then played Blasphemous. Do you mean played Bloodstained?
That's right. Sorry,
okay, good. I was a bit like, whoa.
Everyone who has listened to this episode this year knows that I get those two games confused.
Sure, sure.
They're both, like, you know, gory Metroidvania games that start with blur.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Blasphemous got a pretty middling review from a lot of critics. Like, IGN gave it like a 6 or something like that.
Dickheads.
They also gave Death Stranding a 6, which is my favorite AAA game of the year, so whatever.
I'm thrown into a spin here. I don't know what to believe.
Also, I think that's what happens when you have multiple reviewers.
Like, sure.
There is a reviewer at IGN who hosts the Nintendo Voice Chat IGN podcast, Tom Marks, who is the reason that I even knew about Hollow Knight to begin with. He was talking about it on PC before it came out on Nintendo Switch, and then I got it day and date because he was excited about it. I wish he was the reviewer for Blasphemous, because I think as a fan of Metroidvanias, he would have seen the value in it. Yeah. Not even understood it, but just would have, like, you know, I don't know. It was a game that I was really looking forward to him playing, so I could find a common soul in this. Because I know a few people in the PayFam Discord have gone in on this game on my recommendation and loved it. It is a game. What's the setting it's set in? It's
like kind of gothic,
Spanish gothic,
European Dark Ages gothic Catholicism, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the game studio are from Spain themselves.
Yeah.
So it's the game is set in a land of religion and superstition with multiple influences from Christianity. The game's art style is influenced by the locations, traditions, and culture of Seville in Spain, and influences can also be seen in the artwork A Procession of Flagellants.
God damn.
So you play as, like, I can't remember all the terms right now. The penitent one?
Yeah, the penitent one.
And so, like, it has all of the trappings of a Metroidvania game. Like, you're leveling up, you have, like, you know, energy that you have to level up so you can take more damage,
mm-hmm.
but that is like it's been a few months since I played it, but, like, sure. It's all represented by different things that link back to religious iconography and things like that, and your soul, and it has, like, the Hollow Knight / Dark Souls thing where if you die, you know, you leave back some of your riches. Normally it's like, yeah, all your money gets left at the point where you die, and you have to track back to where you last were and reclaim your money.
Sure.
In this one, your sins,
yes.
your guilt, you yes. leave behind your guilt, and you have to go back and reclaim your guilt, or otherwise you have to find someone to confess your guilt to reclaim your guilt if you've left them all over the world. The map is enormous. And again, it's that discovery thing of finding all these different terrains and situations to traverse through. My absolute highlight of the game is when you make it to a prison. in okay. which there are like people that escape their cells and charge at you. There were so many inventive and creepy enemies and bosses. Like my absolute favorite boss was like this skeleton pope in a coffin being held up by the arms of his supporters.
Yeah.
And so you have to first attack all the arms while he's attacking you until they like drop the coffin and then you can attack the skeleton.
Amazing.
It was so inventive, so fun. You get all these bizarre like prayers instead of mana or spells.
Yeah.
So your prayers represent like the big magical axe you can get. And then there was like some of the bosses are just like another fighter that's the same size as you that's just very powerful. Like the array of different enemies that you fight in this, it was so satisfying. Some of the boss levels are so fucking difficult and just rely on you just not making a mistake.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you can't just fuck up your way through it. Like, if you make one mistake, you're fucked. There's even like someone in this game who, before you start going up against the three early bosses, is like, hey, do you want some help? I can help you. And that you can either say yes or no. And if you say yes three times, you then have to fight that person's sibling who's like, my sister gave her life to support you.
Oh, wow.
And like, he is by far the hardest boss you face.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Up until that point.
It's like, it's so clever though.
Yeah.
And it's a game that, again, like all these games that I've put in my top, you know, top five, they're games with like immense replayability. Like, given this was a game that I played for 30 something hours, so I'm going to need to like, you know, be pretty far away from it to replay it. But I really want to know what happens when you refuse the help of,
sure.
of this person and she still lives. Do you fight her?
Yeah,
exactly. Like, who do you fight? Like, or do you just get, is that just not a difficult boss that you have to get through?
Yeah.
Man, I loved the hell out of this game and I was mostly encouraged to make it my number one because I have not seen it on anyone else's top 10 list this year. And Siri doesn't understand, but it was just play it, Siri. But look, I urge anyone who likes Metroidvanias to give this one a shot.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful looking and weird and cool game. I know some of the criticism comes from like the somewhat slow, sluggish kind of combat, but like, I don't know, like the penitent one is like, he's just a mere mortal with a weapon. And like, I kind of liked that it was.
And there's a difference between sluggish combat and paced combat.
Like, it's beautifully responsive, but it's like, yeah.
You don't just run up and be like, yeah, as quickly as possible. It's the dance of like parry, learn the opposition, what they're going to do, then attack when you like. Because I was, when I started playing it, I did my usual, like, I just run in and spam the attack button and I'll be fine. Like, no, I was not fine. No,
you have to parry.
I learned to like, you know, there's shielded enemies. I need to wait for them to kind of attack me so I can parry and open them up and then take them down, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And it just has all the things that I just find so addictive. Like, you know, it's that knowing that if you just go forward a little bit more, you're going to have access to a new area and then find a new warp point. And then you're going to get a new level up that's going to allow you to go back and revisit all these things. Who knows what you're going to find there? And also is that great thing, that really satisfying thing where you keep getting more powerful and also better at the game. So like enemies that were just wasting you earlier in the game, you can then just go back to like, you know, they end up becoming like just an obstacle on the way that you can just cut down in two swipes.
Not even in the service of the game. You're just going back to be like beat on these guys. Like,
yeah.
It's like when you come back to your childhood bully and you're all swole and you're like, what now? Let's do this. It's like that.
So I got the bad ending of this game. Good ending, you have to do a lot more. Basically, you have to destroy not quite a save point, but something similar to a save point.
Okay.
That allows you to get your guilt back. Once you've destroyed all these things, you can then go get the good ending. So that is something that I one day hope to do.
And I can't imagine what the bad ending is.
I mean, like, yeah, you win. It just is, like, kind of a bummer.
Right, yeah.
You play games like
Catholicism.
That.
Catholicism.
Yeah, but I loved it. It's quite daring to do a religious
100%.
Themed game that, like, I didn't see any controversy about this. People didn't, I guess it wasn't, maybe it's a good thing that it wasn't anyone's top 10 list because no one seemed to be up in arms about its portrayal of, you know, early Catholicism and Christianity. But, I mean, also, it's, you know, extremely heightened. But, yeah, also, there's so much fucked up shit in religious history. It's so ripe for games. Yeah.
And metal band album covers.
Yeah, totally. Too. Like, I would love an even more referential, like, instead of being based around the people who follow Catholicism, like, I would love a Castlevania in which you play as, you know, someone in the Old Testament, or like a really biblical feeling, Metroidvania game would be so much fun. Yeah. Like, you know, I've grown up being forced to listen to those stories, so they're drummed
might
into
well
my...
Get, might as well get something
I might as well
of
get
it.
To kill all the characters
yeah,
in them,
exactly.
Am I right?
Yeah. You have not unlocked the ability to part the Red Sea yet. Please come
crush!
Cool. Blasphemous, number one.
That's my number one game of the year. And like, any of those top three games, or even Cadence... Yeah, top five. Cadence of Hyrule, Ape Out... Ringo Ishikawa, Katana Zero, and Blasphemous. When I said in the last episode that I hadn't decided in the order, that was because I love those five games so much that they are all interchangeable to me. They could all be in that top three and in that number one spot.
Number one.
They're excellent games.
Right. And obviously...
Everyone, Archie's back.
Archie's back.
Have you changed your mind? Have you got
a different what do you think about Blasphemous?
Where would you
not
put Blasphemous on your 100
Catholic enough?
Hey, this is a good Catholic school educated boy, okay?
Oh, I know.
He's not ready for Blasphemous. Archie, John's going to tell us his number one game of the year. Are you ready?
You ready for this? Yeah. Getting a big smile from the boy. My number one game of the year is, as Levin's proudly guessed minutes ago, Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
I think I'm like a lot of people this year where Disco Elysium just came out of left field and proved to be one of the most...
Archie, if you go back to the kitchen, I'll give you a treat when we finish recording.
Okay. My number one game of the year is Child Bribery. Look, it's... Disco Elysium came out of nowhere and honestly, on paper, shouldn't work. Like, it's an old-school isometric RPG, very heavily based in, like, old-school pen-and-paper dice RPGs, but there's no combat. All the kind of stats you can build up are, like, parts of your mental faculty, essentially, like empathy, or, like, you know, another example is, like, shivers, which is kind of, like, a sense of what's happening on the street.
Yeah, right.
Like, that kind of stuff. Esprit de corps, you know, about police procedure and that kind of stuff. On paper, all of this stuff, if you just read it, you'd be like, this is nuts. What the fuck is this game about? Playing this game, I've seen Disco Elysium, because obviously it being 2019, there's a lot of lists coming out about best games of the decade. I've seen Disco Elysium popping up on those lists, and I'm 100% behind it. It's blown away. How to put this? It's both very similar to and unlike anything I've ever played before.
It makes sense that it would be in that best games of the decade, because I think one of the biggest, most prominent game genres of the last decade is the Western RPG.
Yes, this
like,
is fair.
It was such a, you know, a Japanese genre of game for so long until, like, you're obviously you have, like, you know, the big fantasy style RPGs and, you know, like, you know, your Morrowind or whatever the fuck, you know, that shit and your Fallouts, you know, the Bethesda style of game. But
sure,
this feels like almost like, you know, pen and paper dice roll style RPG. Like,
it's almost like the next evolution of RPGs for video games. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but like, if you haven't played this game, the story is you are a detective who has been sent to a town to investigate a murder. The thing is, you've already been in town for 7 days. You've spent that 7 days wasted off your face on drugs and alcohol. So when the game starts, you can't actually remember who you are or why you have come to this town. So it's up to you to sort of like wander around and talk to people and as sort of subtly or as unsubtly as you want, go, hey, I can't remember who I am. Do you know who I am? Why am I here? Sort of thing. And what this allows you to do is kind of, as you go through your dialogue choices, you make your own character. You can choose if you want to be this, like, I sort of chose this path of penitence, I guess, where I'm like, look, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to get wasted anymore. It was dumb of me to do that. Fuck it. You can double down.
Really?
You can, like, take drugs in people's faces. You can, like, be a total dirtbag, be a complete piece of shit. If you want to, there's options in the dialogue to do that. You can go completely insane, essentially. You know, you have a partner, you can, I think, refuse the help of your partner. You can be like, why are you following me? Fuck off. I work alone. I'm the coolest cop in this place kind of thing. Obviously, the story it's telling is, it's a very heavily text kind of based game. All the dialogue sort of happens in text format, but it does have some incredible voice acting, including people from like Chapo Trap House or Pod Save America or some weird connection like that, like one of the political podcasts do voice work. The soundtrack is by a English indie group, British Sea Power, which, again, if you're into music, that might be something that jazzes you up. But it blew me. The writing in this game blew me away. It is at turns hilarious. It is at turns heartbreaking. It's poetic. The way this guy might be talking about himself 1 minute was making me laugh a lot, and then one of his senses might kick in, particularly Shivers, the one about like what's happening in the street sort of thing, and just deliver you this line of like pure sort of prose about like, you know, the chip packets rustle in the wind as the so and so, and I'm just like, wow, that's fantastic.
One tear rolling down your cheek.
Beautiful. But then like there's another part where you have to go and tell a woman that you found her husband dead. And like, you know, kind of classic police work style. The world it's in is really weird and interesting. It's like a very sort of European, Eastern European feeling world. But like, I can't even explain the politics of it. It's like the city it's set in is owned by various, like a conglomeration of nations around the world kind of thing. It is very, very heavily couched in sort of politics and social theory. I sunk 40 hours into it and almost wanted to turn around and go again just to make different choices. Like, I wanted to see how my choices affected how the game ends, essentially. I did say in that Facebook group you were talking about earlier, there's a very, very, very slight wobble in the ending as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
When it's revealed who committed the murder, my initial reaction was like, okay, right. But then something happens that I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm 100% back on board. This has just gotten really, really, really weird. Let's run with this kind of thing. It's some of the most incredible world building I've ever seen. Some of the most amazing dialogue I've ever seen. Character building across the board. It was just, like I said about Outer Wilds, that was my number one for ages. And then I played Disco Elysium and just went, shit, this has just blown me away. I can't believe, like, and it's one of those weird things where it's like, it's still PC only.
I know, I hope it comes to console.
It's coming to console, it's coming to Xbox and PS4 next year.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to more people getting to play this game, which is the same with Outer Wilds. Like, Outer Wilds was an Xbox exclusive for a long time. It coming to PS4, I was like, thank fuck, because more people that I know, because I'm sure a bunch of people played it, but I don't know many people with Xboxes, because y'all are smart. I got mine for free. But yeah, I cannot wait for more people to get to experience Disco Elysium, because it just blew me away how incredible it was.
Yeah. Unreal.
Hot damn. Let's, 5-1.
Let's cut through the top 10.
Let's do it again. You go, go, go.
Okay. Number 10, Sayonara Wild Hearts. Number 9, Slay the Spire. Number 8, What the Golf. Number 7, Gato Roboto. Number 6, Untitled Goose Game. Number 5, Cadence of Hyrule. Number 4, Ape Out. Number 3, The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa. Number 2, Blasphemous. Sorry, number 1, Katana Zero. And number... Wait.
Number two,
Katana Zero. And number 1, Blasphemous.
There we go. For me, number 10, Grindstone. Number 8, number 9, Children of Morta. Number 8, Sayonara Wild Hearts. Number 7, Katana Zero. Number 6, Control. Number 5, What the Golf. Number 4, Ape Out. Number 3, Untitled Goose Game. Number 2, Outer Wilds. And number 1, Disco Elysium.
So, John, I also asked you to have a think about what you think the best indie publisher of the year was. I think far and away we're both going to say
Devolver. It's Devolver.
So here's what Devolver put out in 2019. Pikuniku.
Amazing.
Ape Out.
Great.
Weedcraft Incorporated.
I've played it.
Katana Zero. I don't know what Observation is.
Oh, I know that one. It's you play as a space station AI as things go wrong on the space station and you're trying to... It looks good. It's been making its way into a lot of end-of-year lists as well.
Gato Roboto.
Sure.
Devolver Bootleg.
Yeah.
My Friend Pedro.
Okay.
Gorn. Metal Wolf Chaos XD.
Hell yeah.
Witch Eye.
Right.
Heave Ho. Exit the Gungeon, Cricket Through the Ages. These are all
mobile.
These are all mobile games, like Apple Arcade games.
Cricket Through the Ages is great.
Bleak Sword and Painty Mob.
Hell yeah! And then that's just, a fucking strong year.
That's crazy. What was the the first person game that I just gave you the code to on Switch?
You haven't sent it to me, but it's the Talos Principle.
They put out a Switch version of that too.
Yeah.
Thank you for the reminder. Also, that's you.
Yeah.
And then we know for next year they've got Weird West, which was just in that last Nindies.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, me too. It's by the Met guys who made something that, a lot bigger than those, that game looks.
Sure.
Fall Guys, which is like a party game.
Okay, yeah.
Carrion, which at this point is an Xbox exclusive, looks, which is really upsetting for me.
It's like, hey, not so dumb now, huh?
And something called Aeta. And Serious Sam 4 Planet Badass.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know what that is. Whatever. Yeah. But anyway, Devolver had an incredible year this year. Like,
they did.
How many? I think there's like 4 of their games in my top 10.
Yeah, that's quite possible. Gata
Roboto, Ape Out, and Katana Zero. So 3. And then Pika Nico, my honorable mentions.
I mean, obviously, I still maintain a lot of love for Annapurna.
Yep.
And I think if they drop Kentucky Zero TV Edition, the complete game on Switch this coming year, boom, automatic win for next year.
Massive.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's how much I love it.
Well, it was an incredible year and incredible episode. I hope you enjoyed these last two extra long episodes of the Small Games. We're going to take a break. I don't know for how long. Definitely 1 week, possibly two.
Yes. We will have an ep up in January. It'll just probably be back half.
A few episodes of up in January. Sure. Maybe even 2 to 3.
Oh.
But we'll definitely have 1 to 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
I'm not in Sydney for a few weeks. And also, I think we could both use a break.
We could both, to
actually play games instead of talking about them.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening this year. I think we made the massive decision to turn this into a weekly show this year. And I hope, we've mostly stuck to schedule. It's been especially trying these last few weeks.
Yeah.
Next year, I am taking a lot less work in December, I can tell you that much.
Excellent.
But so I can actually play games and relax a bit more and actually see my family. And also not be like, oh my God, now I've got to edit a half-hour podcast.
Right.
Thanks to everyone who started listening to the show this year. Thanks to everyone who, even more for sticking with us from years beforehand. I love doing this show. I love hanging out with John.
Hell yeah.
And talking about our favorite thing in the world, which is indie video games.
Woohoo!
Hope you have a great New Year's Eve.
If you want to contact us, you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/allthesmallgames, or Twitter, allthesmallgame, or @allthesmallgame. Or you can send us an email, allthesmallgames@gmail.com. You can hit us up individually. Levin's is Levdog, LEVDAWG, and I am @16tacos across both Insta and Twitter.
We love hearing from you. I mean, look, yeah. we know that there
give
are...
Give us your top 10.
There's a lot of people listening to this podcast, and I reckon we only ever hear and interact with, I don't know, 20 of them.
Yeah.
It would be great. Look, I'm not saying tell us how much you love us, but like, you know, if you are a fan of this show, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. So,
if you're out there lurking, come in from the cold.
Don't be a lurker. Be a murker. Come and kill us.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't be lurking. Wear a merkin.
Oh.
Send us a pic.
We need an off and on one, though.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in 2020.
Hell yeah. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.